February 8th, 2016, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, Text 29.
Become dejected. Sargay. For creation. Ujjamam. Enterprises.
Avaha. You just undertake. Tut. That which you want. Maya. By me. Aparitam. Executed. He. Certainly. Agre. Previously. Yet. Which. Mom. From me. Partayate. Begging. Bhavan. You.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then said, O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation. What you are begging from me has already been granted before. Purport. Any person authorized by either the Lord or his bona fide representative is already blessed, as is the work entrusted to him. Of course, the person entrusted with such a responsibility should always be aware of his incapability and must always look for the mercy of the Lord for the successful execution of his duty. One should not be puffed up because he is entrusted with certain executive work. Fortunate is he who is so entrusted, and if he is always fixed in the sense of being subordinate to the will of the Supreme, he is sure to come out successful in the discharge of his work. Arjuna was entrusted with the work of fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and before he was so entrusted, the Lord had already arranged for his victory. But Arjuna was always conscious of his position as subordinate to the Lord, and thus he accepted him as a supreme guide in his responsibility. Anyone who takes pride in doing responsible work but does not give credit to the Supreme Lord is certainly falsely proud and cannot execute anything nicely. Brahma and persons in the line of his disciplic succession who follow in his footsteps are always successful in the discharge of loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Ma Veda Garbhas Gas Tan Dream Sarga Udyamam Udyamam Avaha Tan Maya Paditam Yagre Yanmam Partayate Bhavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then said, O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation, which you are begging from me has already been granted before. Prabhupada twice uses the word successful. Sure to come out successful in the discharge of his work, always successful in the discharge of loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord. What does that mean? To be successful. I mean, everybody wants to be successful. Anybody wake up this morning and say, hey, I really want to be a failure today. You know, the parents don't bring up their children. Make sure you grow up and be a failure. The teachers don't say, you know, be a failure. Or the employers. Everybody wants to be a success. Right? Everybody wants to be a winner. Even it's so ingrained that we want to be a winner that the people who gain second place at the Olympics, they become unhappy. Why didn't we gain first place? You know, they just had in America this big football game, which I knew because my neighbor was from across the street was screaming at the TV. Oh, it must be some game. So the team that loses the Super Bowl, they're second place in the country, but they're not happy because everybody wants to be a success. So what does it mean to be a success? How do we do it, and what does it mean? How do we define success? How do we define success, and then how do we get there? Let's first look at how we define success. So, generally, materially, people define success as achieving the result they desire. Right? They have a particular plan, they want to get a particular thing, and if they get it, they consider themselves successful. You know, I want a promotion at work, I get a promotion, I've achieved success. You know, I want to be first place in the world in javelin throwing and I get the gold medal, then I'm successful. I've achieved what I want. Is that totally correct, however? Even a materialistic person, would they totally and completely define success as externally getting what they want? Well, the answer to that is no. Recently in America also there was some huge lottery, I don't remember, millions or billions of dollars, something absurd. But everybody knows, it's well-known statistics, that a large portion of people who gain sudden wealth end up within a few months to be worse off than they were before they gained the wealth. And the reasons for that should be fairly obvious. You know, they get a lot of fame for their wealth, which means a lot of people start interacting with them, hey, can I get some money from you? People become envious, people become greedy, their relationships with others change, and especially to get a large amount of wealth all of a sudden, they don't know what to do with it. So either they spend it very quickly and it's all gone within a very short time, right? I had a brother-in-law who inherited $1 million from his brother, and within a year it was all gone. And he couldn't even remember, you know, what he spent it on. So they may dissipate it very quickly, or they may be so afraid of spending it unwisely that they become a miser and they go on living the same way they were living before. Many times people who get a large amount of wealth suddenly get into very bad habits. Right? Such happens often with inheritance also. And Prabhupada talks about how one generation works hard for the money, the next generation squanders it, and the third generation is in poverty. So sometimes getting what you want is not success because it doesn't really get you inwardly what you want. So the way we really define success is when our inner desires become fulfilled. Now, we may be convinced that our inner desires will be fulfilled by getting something particularly external. You know, most people are convinced, particularly with money, that if they simply were to get enough money, that money would facilitate them getting everything else that they want. That if they had money, that they would get freedom, they would get pleasure, they would get status, they would get power, and so forth. Those things are very strongly associated with money. But you can get money without any of those things. As I was just hearing Prabhupada saying, you know, when a rich man gets a disease, it's not that he suffers less than when a poor man gets the same disease. You can say, well, the rich man has access to all medical treatment, you know, the best doctors and the best medicine. That doesn't mean the rich man's in less pain. Sometimes, in fact, having access to the doctors and the medicine makes you sicker longer. Hare Krishna. The point is that it's not really the money one is after. It's really what the money will give you. So if you get the money, but by getting the money you don't get freedom, you don't get pleasure, you don't get status, then you're not really successful. If you marry the person that, you know, the person of your dreams, but once you're married to them, you're unhappy, you're not fulfilled, then we wouldn't call that successful. I tell this story a lot. And when I was in university, one of my professors was telling us how when he was 19, he went to a seminar of how to become a school superintendent by the time you're 33. So a superintendent in the United States is someone who's in charge of a district of schools, many schools. And the seminar reciter, seminar presenter, he gave a recipe, a formula. Become a teacher, but quit after 3 years. Then do this. He had a whole list of what to do. So our professor was very enthused and enlivened, and he followed this recipe exactly, and indeed he became a school superintendent when he was 33. So he achieved success. Ostensibly, he achieved success. He said that soon after becoming a school superintendent, he realized he didn't like being a school superintendent. His wife hated it so much, she ended up divorcing him. She couldn't tolerate living that life of high pressure, everybody always watching what you do, everybody criticizing you for any, you know, you're in charge of 40 schools. Anything that goes wrong in any of the 40 schools, you're responsible. So he decided it wasn't success. And after spending his life from age 19 to 33 to become a school superintendent, after a few years he quit, and he realized that what he really loved to do was teach. Right? The advice to become a school superintendent was teach only for 3 years. So you go up in the ladder. And he went back to being a teacher at that time in a university. The point is that success is not the external thing. Success is whether or not our inner desires are satisfied. Or we could go even a little further, whether or not our inner needs are fulfilled. Ultimately, those are needs of the soul. Whether we feel fulfilled, whether we have peace, whether we have loving relationships, whether we have satisfaction, whether, you know, all the psychologists list so many needs that we have, most of which are also spiritual needs. So that's success, not externally. And people who achieve the satisfaction of their needs and desires internally, even if externally, they don't have the things in the world which we think are necessary or helpful for achieving that satisfaction, we will still see them as successful. Someone who doesn't have a lot of money, you know, very simple life, but you say, I'm completely satisfied. I have everything that I want. So that person is a success. So this definition of success is applicable ultimately to the spiritual, because materially, nobody's ever going to be completely satisfied. That's just not possible. It's not material. Success on the material platform is not possible. We can say briefly why. It's not the main topic we're talking about today, but the brief reasons why it can't be successful. First of all, it has nothing to do with the self. It's success on the platform of the body and the mind, not the self. It's something like, as Prabhupada would often say, polishing the cage of a bird and not feeding the bird. Putting fuel in your car and not having any lunch yourself. You know, putting clean clothes on a dirty, sweaty body. And so it doesn't, it's not touching the self. It's just external. I often think of it as a photograph. You know, in the modern society, people share photographs of their life. And they take some photograph, everyone's smiling and having a good time, and you look at the photograph, oh, I'm successful. Mm-hmm. So something like that. You take a photograph of your life, and you look at it and say, I'm successful. It's simply a mental construct. You don't really have those desires fulfilled on the level of the soul. And also, one can't be materially successful because one is disconnected. If you're putting food in the stomach but the hand's cut off, then the hand is not going to experience any nourishment from the food put in the stomach. So as long as we have this illusion of separateness from Krishna, then we can't feel nourished. We have to be connected to the whole. Another reason that we can never be successful materially is that we're trying to achieve our desires ultimately in a very self-centered way. Even when we so-called please others, our motive in pleasing others is to ultimately to please ourselves. And that's not natural for us. It cannot really give us a feeling of success. Real success, the ultimate attainment of all of our desires, is only achieved in love. When we have real love, then we feel completely fulfilled on all levels. And of course, real love can only be had for our actual source in a selfless way. So real success of our spiritual endeavors, first of all, Prabhupada says in a general way, successful in the discharge of his work, and then he says in a specific way, successful in the discharge of loving transcendental service. So when Prabhupada is talking about our work, he's not just talking about some fruit of work, but he's talking about a loving transcendental service, is when all of our desires are genuinely fulfilled. This is what Dhruva said. He said, now all of my desires are genuinely fulfilled. I don't want anything more. And this theme of I am fulfilled is found throughout the Shastra, throughout the works of our Acharyas, that the devotee will say to the Lord, I am fulfilled. The Lord asked the devotee, what would you like? I don't have anything to ask for. I have everything. Right? I have everything. Sometimes it's like that. Even materially, sometimes it's like that. Someone says, "What can I buy you?" Well, I don't need anything. I have everything that I need. So what to speak of spiritually? Spiritually, the devotee is finding that all of their needs, all their desires are fulfilled beyond what they can imagine. Even the external material things, like with Kardama Muni, who wanted a compatible wife. And Prabhupada says there in the purport that if one goes to the Lord, that one will be satisfied beyond one's desire. Here, Brahma, who wants to create the world, he's looking at the water of devastation, he's overwhelmed, he's bewildered. And Krishna says, don't worry. The Lord says to him, don't worry. You will be fulfilled beyond your expectations. It's already all settled. So that's the ultimate measure of success. And it's very important. It's very important to understand the definition of success. Because many times we bring into spiritual life our material conceptions that success is in the external arrangements. As I said, even the materialistic people understand that ultimately success is not in the external arrangements, but it's in the internal satisfaction. They do ultimately understand this. They understand that if you win, you know, $350 million in the lottery and you use the money to, you know, get high on cocaine and you ruin your life, that you didn't achieve success by the lottery. In fact, the lottery was your downfall. So they understand that concept. But even with understanding that concept, materialistic people still tend to be fixated on the external things that they can count. You know, how many dollars, how many buildings, how many years of marriage, how many followers, and so forth. You know, how beautiful your nose is. That's what they tend to look at. Will this person's become a success? And unfortunately, materialistic people will often sacrifice the fulfillment of their real desires and needs to get the external thing which they're getting supposedly to fulfill their true needs. So we can make the same mistake in spiritual life. Happens all the time. That we think success is in something we can count. How many sticks of incense I have waved, how many rounds of japa I have chanted. You know, I chanted 64 rounds. Oh, wow, I chanted 120 rounds. Oh, that's nothing. I know that my friend chanted 192 rounds. You know. So we tend to measure in things like that. I had one devotee who I finally just kind of blocked out of my life, who was almost daily sending me messages, unless you're chanting 64 rounds, your life is wasted, and anyone who's not chanting 64 rounds is, you know, so that was his whole measure of success. How many books you've distributed, how many temples you've opened. And interestingly, Jiva Goswami makes this point that if one intentionally is inattentive in one's chanting and one's devotional activities, one will very deeply fall into this trap of measuring one's success by some external thing you can count and take a photograph of. You know, here's a photograph of me with the temple that I built and all the money that I've earned to build the temple, and therefore I am a success. Now, how does one get one's needs fulfilled in Krishna consciousness? Interestingly enough, one gets one's needs fulfilled in Krishna consciousness by making the Lord happy. Materially, we try to get our needs fulfilled directly. And spiritually, we get our needs fulfilled by forgetting about getting our needs fulfilled and trying to satisfy Krishna's needs. Exactly like the hand becomes fulfilled by feeding the stomach. The hand is not focused on its own direct fulfillment at all. But by nourishing the stomach, it becomes fulfilled. Just like when we work in Indian Vrindavan with the slum children, and many of the children there end up with blonde hair. So the devotees, they were telling us that when the Indians have blonde hair, it means they're malnourished. So it's not just a question of, you know, dyeing their hair or having some proper shampoo for their hair, but giving them good food. When you give them good food, then their hair takes on its natural color and luster. So that is the measure of our success. Is Krishna pleased? And when Krishna is pleased, as because we are part of him, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, because we are part of Krishna, when we have that connection with Krishna, that yoga, that yukta, and we please him, then we feel that all of our desires are fulfilled. And because he's unlimited and constantly expanding, when we have that connection with him and are working to satisfy him, we feel that our desires are fulfilled unlimitedly. That we can't measure the extent of our happiness. Sudama Brahmana is a very good example of this. He went to see Krishna in Dwarka at the pushing of his wife. She said, you know, you're so poor that we don't have enough to eat. We're shaking due to our ill health. Go to Krishna and ask him for some money. So Sudama thought, all right, well, I don't really care about the money, but I'll go see Krishna. And when he saw Krishna, he didn't ask him for anything. He forgot, because it wasn't really his thing. It was his wife's thing. It wasn't what he was fixated on. He was fixated just on being with Krishna, making Krishna happy. Right? Even he didn't want to give Krishna the gift his wife had prepared because it was just a cheap quality of rice. Right? And when he left Dwarka, he left seemingly in the same condition that he had arrived, and he was thinking, what? Oh yeah, I was supposed to ask Krishna for something, but I forgot, and it's good that he didn't give me anything. He said, because, you know, the father doesn't give wealth to the hands of an immature son who's just going to misspend it. And because I'm so immature, Krishna knew I wouldn't be able to handle it properly. Of course, Krishna, in his very playful, loving way, when Sudama came home, he found that he had gotten this gorgeous palace. And his consciousness didn't change. He used his poverty-stricken condition in service, and he used his wealth in service. So the devotee, when they're connected with Krishna, they find that their desires are fulfilled beyond their expectations. Beyond their expectations. But not necessarily externally. In Sudama Brahmana's case, it was external. In Kolavitcha Sridhar's case, it wasn't external. The Lord kept pressing him, don't you want something? No, I'm happy being a poor banana leaf seller. So how do we gain this real success? How do we gain this actual internal success in everything we do? That we feel the connection with the Lord, and we feel all of my desires are fulfilled beyond my expectations, regardless of what it looks like externally. Regardless of whether, from the external point of view, anyone thinks of me as successful. Well, Prabhupada mentions 4 points, at least. I'm sure there's more, but I'll pick up 4 here. One is that the work you do has to be authorized. If I'm going to be pleasing Krishna, if my measure of success is that I'm pleasing Krishna and I'm connected with Krishna, well, then I've got to do something that Krishna likes. So we talk about this quite a bit. You know, if you're going to give a gift to somebody, it's got to be a gift that they like. Right? If you're going to give something to someone that they don't like, then that's not going to please them. And, you know, we in this world often try to force what we want on someone else because we're not really trying to please them. We're really trying to please ourselves. So we may become very insistent that somebody take something or that we do something for someone that they really don't want. And such is not a loving exchange. So we should make sure we're doing for Krishna what Krishna wants. That's what it means to be authorized. So how does one get authorized? Well, first of all, one should study Sadhu Shastra Guru. One should study with the sadhus. What do they do? How do they live their lives in a way that pleases Krishna? And there's so many sadhus, and they live in so many different ways. Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotype. So yesterday there was a devotional program here, and some of the family went. And one of the teenagers came back and said, Grandma, do I have to take sannyas to go back to Godhead? And I said, certainly not. And he said, well, one of the devotees there said to me, if you don't take sannyas, there's no question that you're going back to Godhead. So this is absurd. There's so many great devotees in all the different ashrams and all the different varnas, in all different situations. There's devotees who attain perfection by doing the same service over and over again for 40 years. There's devotees who attain perfection by traveling and doing a different service every day for 40 years. There are men, women, and old and young, and black and green and purple, and married and renunciates, and in anything you can imagine. Right? So we see what the sadhus do. How did Bhaktivinoda Thakura live? How did Bhaktisiddhanta live? How did Srila Prabhupada live? The Mahajanas. Yeah. Bhishma, Prahlad, Yamaraj. How do they live? Manu. How do they take the instructions of the Shastra and put them into effect in their own life? The Goswamis, all the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What do they do? How do they exemplify Krishna consciousness? And then, of course, the Shastra. The Shastra gives overall principles, also sometimes very detailed rules, but basically overall principles. And the Shastra is also full of the story of the devotees and how they live, how they exemplify pleasing the Lord. And sometimes stories of how they mess up, how Indra messed up, right? How Brihaspati messed up. So sometimes we also have the cautionary tales, Junior Haridas, you know, Bharat Maharaj, what to do and what not to do. They say the do not list can be as important or more important than the do list. And then, of course, there's guru. Guru is the sadhu, and can be gurus, the sadhu or sadhus, who helps us understand how to apply the principles of the Shastra and the examples of the sadhus into our own life and times. Because these things have to be applied according to time, place, and circumstance. One cannot, if one takes the principles of the Shastra and the examples of the sadhu and doesn't apply them according to one's particular circumstance, then one will end up with a wrong result. So this was the first step in being authorized, and then either getting an order or asking permission. And both are there. Both are there. I was just reading yesterday, and Prabhupada says very frequently that being an individual, we are going to have our own opinions. He said there's no meaning to individuality unless we have our own opinions. We have our own flavor of how we want to serve Krishna. We have our own flavor as materially conditioned souls. We have our own flavor as liberated souls. We want to serve Krishna in a particular way. And we find the great acharyas, they're praying like this. Right? Narottama Das Thakur, he's praying, when can I offer you sandalwood? When can I fan you with a peacock fan? Right? The acharyas explain the different services of the liberated residents of Vrindavan. So some are collecting flowers, but some are collecting herbs. Some are joking with Krishna, and some are very shy. So they each have their different ways they want to serve Krishna. So the devotee asks, may I serve you in this way, Krishna? And gets the blessings. Or the devotee is given an order. Please go do this. So sometimes we get an order from guru, from sadhus, and sometimes we seek the blessings of the guru from and sadhus. And one is not higher than the other. Orders are not higher than seeking blessings. Sometimes we have that misconception. But even in a mundane company, in a good company, not all companies are run well, but in a well-run company, the supervisors welcome suggestions from the employees. They don't want the employees just to follow orders. In fact, in companies where the employees just follow orders and cannot make suggestions, the company generally falls apart. I was just reading yesterday about there was a terrible fire years ago in London in the underground, in the subway. And the full investigation revealed that the main reason that the fire ended up getting out of control and killing so many people is that the people who ran the subways, the underground, were thoroughly trained in simply following orders, never doing anything out of their own volition, never stepping out of their bounds. And so when the first underground employee was alerted to the fact that there was a small fire in a rubbish bin, in a trash can, he put out that fire, but he never investigated to see whether or not it was coming from a bigger fire. Another employee walked right past the sprinkler system that could have put out the fire, but because the sprinkler system was under the control of a different department, this employee didn't even know it existed. He walked right by it without even knowing it was there, what to speak of turning it on. And the solution to prevent fires in the future was they had to have at least one person in charge of passenger safety who could coordinate with all the departments and who could get suggestions and inputs from anybody in any departments. So when you have something that's run just robotically, like a machine, and everyone just follows orders, then even on a material level, things fall apart. And on a spiritual level, that's not very pleasing. You know, I mean, we may get frustrated when the people we live and work with don't do what we want them to do, but I don't think we'd want to just live with a bunch of machines. We want to live with people who have their own volition. So that's the first thing, being authorized. The second thing we talked about quite a bit last time, Prabhupada says, being aware of our own incapability. So we are basically, at all times, trying to do something, whatever we are trying to do, for which we are incapable. Well, that's kind of awful, isn't it? But if one realizes that one's incapable, then one will take proper shelter, one will take proper guidance. As long as we think, I know, I am capable, then we don't connect. If real success is to be connected, we first have to realize I am incapable on my own. If I maintain an illusion of disconnection, I don't have the capability. I'm not able to do it. I give the example all the time, you know, we have a little battery in our phones, but that battery in our phones is not capable of powering, you know, all the electricity needed for a room or for a home. It's just not capable. It has to be plugged in, right? So to realize our incapability, to reach out, after all, again, if success is being connected, we need to reach out and not try to do things in a separated, independent way, and looking for mercy. So these do go very much together. Prabhupada talks about always being capable, aware of his incapability, he must always look for the mercy of the Lord. So this is, actually there again, we have the word successful, so it's three times. I said two, but it's three. For the successful execution of his duty. So these two go together. We can't cry out for the mercy of the Lord sincerely if we think that we're capable on our own. And if we're just thinking incapable and we don't cry out for the mercy of the Lord, then we simply become depressed. So we want a combination of both. And we see this combination of both, feeling incapable and crying out for the mercy of the Lord, in the great joy of the devotees. I always love where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, "My dear Lord, you have liberated the whole world, but that's not a big accomplishment for you, but you've liberated this one Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now that is amazing." He said, "You have turned a crow into Garuda." So this is humility in joy. Or Krishna Das Kaviraj, who says, "I'm lower than the worm in the stool. Anyone who says my name becomes sinful. Yet, by Nityananda's mercy, I have been given the service of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan." So these two things together. I am incapable, and yet I have gotten mercy. And the more incapable one feels, the more one feels gratitude and joy at receiving mercy. Right? I'm sure Bill Gates is not very excited by someone giving him a $100 donation, but some homeless person would be very excited. So the more incapable one feels, the more one is eager for this mercy. And Prabhupada also mentions being fixed in the sense of being subordinate to the Lord's will. So, of course, that is very connected to being authorized. So although we have four things here, they're kind of in pairs. So aware of incapability and looking for mercy need to go together. And being authorized and fixed in the sense of being subordinate to the Lord's will. In other words, authorization is not a one-time thing. And then I go do what I want. It's not that I get an order or I get blessings and then, well, now I'm the doer. Now, you know, it's all about me and my accomplishments. But one remains fixed in that sense of authorization. One always has a sense that what I am doing is for the Lord and to please the Lord. And if we do this, if what we do is authorized and we're fixed in that sense of subordination to the Lord's will, if we're aware of our incapability and looking for mercy, then definitely, absolutely definitely, what we achieve will be successful. However, our success may not look like success to a materialist. Prabhupada talks here about Arjuna in the purport, how Arjuna already won. But what about Bhishma? Bhishma already lost. And Bhishma's losing, right? Already lost. Bhishma's losing is predestined, Arjuna's winning is predestined. And Bhishma knew that. He knew he was going in the battle to lose. He already knew it. He knew that the Lord wanted the Pandavas to win. He knew that he was on the wrong side of things. He knew that. And yet, Bhishma's fighting was as successful as Arjuna. Bhishma's death is as glorified as Arjuna and the Pandavas' ascent to the throne. When Maharaj Yudhisthira, surrounded by his brothers, ascends to the throne of the world, so all of the great sages, demigods, etc. are congratulating him. And when Bhishma is dying on the bed of arrows, similarly, the sages and the demigods are glorifying him. Bhishma's so-called failure is not a failure. It's not a failure. I'm just reading the story of Vritrasura and Indra. It's so funny. Vritrasura is in the form of a great, fearsome demon. Indra's there in the form of a beautiful, powerful demigod. Indra externally wins the battle. Vritrasura loses the battle and dies. But the real winner there it's not even. With Arjuna and Bhishma, they're both equal winners. But with Vritrasura and Indra, Vritrasura is the winner and Indra is the loser. Even though Indra externally was the winner. Why? Because Vritrasura was really connected with the ultimate purpose of the Lord and Indra wasn't. Indra's desire was contaminated by his own selfishness. Vritrasura was simply adherent to the will of the Lord. So success in loving service of the Lord may not look like success with the externals. As we said in the very beginning, even materially. Material success. Paltry drop of water in the desert. But even that may not comport with the externals. The person who has all the externals in life may not actually have a successful life, even from a material point of view. The person who doesn't have the external things, who's sick or crippled and poor, and they may feel that they have a successful life, that all their desires were fulfilled materially. What to speak of spiritually? And there's so many examples of external failures that were genuine spiritual success, not only Vritrasura and Bhishma, but also I love to give the example of the cowherd boys. Because one could say, well, Bhishma and Vritrasura, that was, their own desire. Bhishma was eating the Kaurava grains, and he made the decision to fight for the Kauravas. It wasn't really authorized by Krishna. Vritrasura, he was Chitraketu. He insulted Lord Shiva. So, maybe if he had really just done what he had told, he would have worked out. And what about the cowherd boys? Cowherd boy said, "We're hungry, Krishna." And Krishna said, "Well, there's some brahmanas nearby who are preparing for a sacrifice, and there's a lot of food there." Right? Even today, in our Hare Krishna society, we know, if I go to a devotional program, there's going to be a lot of delicious food to eat. So he said, "There's going to be a yajna. There's going to be lots of delicious food to eat. Go there and ask the brahmanas for it." So the cowherd boys went there and they asked. And the brahmanas didn't even give them the courtesy of a reply. They didn't acknowledge their presence, basically treated them like they were invisible. And the cowherd boys were disappointed. Kavi Karnapur says that they said to Krishna, "How has nectar become salty? You've given us an order. Your order is infallible, chuta." As Sanjaya says, wherever there's Krishna and Arjuna, there will always be victory. Cowherd boy said there should have been victory. But there was failure. There wasn't success. We've come back empty-handed. And Krishna said, it's a way of begging. Sometimes you get, sometimes you don't. Go back and ask the wives, who, of course, immediately complied. Now, were the cowherd boys failure at first? No. Why were they a success? Because they had pleased Krishna. Why did they please Krishna? Because having the men ask first and refuse, their refusal, made the glorification of the brahmana's wives so much greater. If the cowherd boys had immediately gone to the women and asked them, and the women had immediately given, then the glory of their giving would not be as great. Krishna wanted to glorify his devotees, and he wanted to show the foolishness of putting mundane morality over bhakti. Being attached to ordinary dharma over bhakti. Well, the same is in the story of Bhishma, frankly. Putting mundane morality over bhakti. Krishna wanted to show that. And so Krishna was very pleased with the cowherd boys. He was pleased that they went out even though they were refused. But they were successful. Jatayu was another example I really liked. Jatayu, who tried to stop Ravana from kidnapping Sita and failed. Ravana carried away Sita and killed Jatayu. But Ram and Lakshman were so pleased with Jatayu, although he was just a bird and a vulture, they gave him a funeral like they would give for their own father. So he was successful. Although externally it was a failure. Another example that I like is when Krishna expanded himself as the cowherd boys and the calves. And the cowherd men were taking care of the older cows on top of Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill is very rocky. I'm sure everyone has seen, at least in a video, if you haven't seen personally, cows running. Especially in climates where cows have to be inside all winter. When you let them out of the barn in the spring, they're jumping. Full-grown cows. And they look like little children. Running, jumping. But, you know, you wouldn't do that going down Govardhan Hill. It would be very dangerous. But the cows did that. They were so anxious to see Krishna in the form of their calves that they were running down the rocky path. And generally, you know, the rocky path was enough to keep them at the top of Govardhan Hill. They didn't need another constraint. And the cowherd men, who were all devotees of the Lord and used to being, I'm sure, externally victorious, they tried to stop the cows. And they failed. They failed to stop the cows. And it said they were bewildered and baffled by it, you know, and angry at their failure. So they come down the hill to retrieve the cows, having failed to prevent them from going down the hill. And when they saw the boys, who were, of course, actually expansions of Krishna, they were so overwhelmed with love and ecstasy. So was it a failure? No, it was a success. The fact that the cowherd men could not keep the cows from running down the hill very much pleased Krishna. First of all, that way, in his form of the calves, he got to drink milk from those cows. And second of all, he got to glorify the devotion of the cows. That the cows loved Krishna so much that they would run away from their protectors, who I assume would have sticks and ropes. They would run down the rocky path of Giriraj. So much bhakti. They weren't bothered by the obstacles. They weren't even aware of the obstacles. So that was their success. If this was a live class, I would ask people in the audience to make more suggestions. Because there's so many examples of where, from an external point of view, it appears that things were a failure. It didn't work out. But actually, it was a success. So we should measure our success properly. We should measure our success properly. It's like Prabhupada wrote to Jamuna and Dinatarni, if two people are compatible, then that is association. If 200 people are incompatible, then no one makes any advancement. I don't measure our success in numbers and bigness. That's very much Rajagun. Of course, we want to distribute as many books as possible and build as many temples as possible and make as many devotees as possible. Of course. But those numbers are not really the measure of our success. You know, when I ran a school, the question pretty much, almost everybody asked, how many students do you have? It was rare that someone said, what's the quality of the students you're producing? Right? Don't measure success just in numbers or external or the praises of others. But am I really connecting with Krishna? Have I connected with Krishna? How much have I connected with Krishna today? How much can I say, my dear Lord, I don't want anything else but your loving service? And how much can I say that genuinely? Because all of my needs and desires are automatically fulfilled. Not because it's something in a book that I'm told that I should say. But how much does that come from my inner satisfaction? That's how we should measure our success. And how do we achieve it? Again, we could discuss more ways of achieving it, but just sticking to today's verse and purport, that what we do is authorized. We are within the circle of Sadhu Shastra Guru, and we stay fixed in that sense of being subordinate to the Lord's will, not as a one-time thing, as an ongoing thing. We are aware of our incapability and looking for mercy as a combined. We look for mercy out of incapability, and out of our incapability we look for mercy. And then our lives are a success. And we will feel that everything we do is a success. We will feel that everything that we do, every action, no matter how big, no matter how small, no matter how much noticed by others in the world or unnoticed, no matter how much praised, no matter how much criticized, no matter how materially, seemingly auspicious or inauspicious, we will feel that everything that we're doing is giving us full success. So, thank you very much. Questions, comments?
Donna, was when the...
Well, would you mind, Mother Candita actually had a question.
What?
If that's okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisances.
Hare Krishna.
I have two contributions to make on this topic about ultimate success. Under following the instructions of Krishna or of the Guru. And the first one is Srila Prabhupada. You know, he was instructed by his spiritual master to go and preach in the West. And Srila Prabhupada was just trying and trying and trying, and there just was like so many failures and so many attempts, and nothing was working out. And then, but this was for his glorification, you know, to go through all these austerities. And then finally, success came, you know, when he came. He made it. And because he was a totally surrendered soul. And then the second example I have is with his disciples, Srila Prabhupada, the disciples, when Srila Prabhupada instructed them to purchase that land in Juhu Beach, Mumbai, and to build a temple there. And it just seemed like a hopeless thing, you know. The devotees were, you know, saying, no, this is too far out of the way. And then there were so many horrible obstacles, and that horrible businessman, that Mr. Nair, always just trying to cheat the devotees, and it just seemed like a failure. And why would Prabhupada keep on wanting us to get this land and to keep it and to build a temple and even install deities on there with just like practically a shack as a temple? You know, and then the horrible police came and started tearing down, you know, and dragging devotees off the land and started chopping and cutting through all the work that the devotees had put. And, you know, it just seemed like, well, this is a failure. You know, it's like, what is Srila Prabhupada doing? What is Krishna wanting? Why is he just so determined? And then finally, there was a victory. And this is totally by Krishna's arrangement. And it just all worked out. And just look what a wonderful, successful temple there is. And now that's like, you know, anyway, it just brings supreme success. Mm-hmm. So that's in contribution to the purport of this verse.
But also, I think even if things end without an external success, even if the ending point, you know, Bhishma dying on the bed of arrows, etc., if that's where it ends, still, from a spiritual perspective, from a real perspective, that is a success. We don't have to...
I don't understand that, though.
We don't have to go on to the external accomplishment to call something a success. What's successful is that Krishna is happy and that we feel fully connected with him. That's the measure of success. So if we just say, well, the reason that Juhu was successful is that now there's a big building and so many people are coming. But even the things that Srila Prabhupada did that didn't end up like that, So Chris is asking, isn't the bottom line for success pleasing the spiritual master? Well, pleasing Krishna and pleasing the spiritual master are generally and ultimately the same thing. Of course, there was Hridaya Chaitanya where, at least for a while, it wasn't the same thing. But it is the same thing, and that's why I made the point, how do we get the success? What we do has to be authorized, as Prabhupada says here. Any person authorized by either the Lord or his bona fide representative is already blessed, as is the work entrusted to him. So that is one of the main ways of being successful.
I see. So the success is developing our relationship with Lord Krishna. That's success.
That's success.
I see.
So if you go out for the whole day and you don't sell a single book, but the whole day you were fully connected with Krishna and Guru, you're a success, and you'll feel the success.
Oh.
You'll feel like a success. Whereas if you go out and distribute 500 books and you're thinking, I'm the doer and I'm going to get the big maha plate when I come back, then you know what? You're a failure.
Wow.
Well, there's some agyata sukriti there that you distributed the books and the books have their own potency. And, you know, there's some blessings for that. But really, it's a failure. It's interesting, the verse Shrama Evahi Kevalam, it's all useless. There's the word rati in that verse. And we use that verse, Shrama Evahi Kevalam, to talk about materialistic activities. That materialistic activities are all ultimately failures. Similar to 1728, Ashrayam Ritam Datam Tapas Taptam Kritam Tayat Asat Ichu Chite Parta Nachita Pretano Iha. Anything done without faith in the Supreme is useless. Or Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, where he talks about just beating the husks, the empty husks, all you get is your trouble. But there's another, I mean, Prabhupada says if we remain a Prakriti Bhakta, if we don't develop Rati for Krishna, that's also Shrama Evahi Kevalam. It's not a success. Okay, ultimately, Bahunam Jamanam Mante. Ultimately, as we amass the Agyata Sukriti, etc., will ultimately lead to success if we don't offend the devotees on the way. But that's not the success. So building the big temple and distributing thousands of books and, you know, those are not indicative of success, nor do they necessarily give us success. I mean, obviously we'd like to do both, but that's not in our hands. We'd like to be connected with Krishna and fully satisfied in our relationship with Krishna and build the big temple and distribute millions of books and distribute millions of plates of prasadam. Of course we would. But the external is not, that's not under our control. Never was, never will be. You know, I can build a big temple and then there's an earthquake tomorrow and the whole thing collapses. I mean, I can't control that. But what I can control is whether or not I'm connected with Krishna, whether or not I've dedicated everything to Guru and Krishna. That I can't control. So that's real success. And that real success can be there even if there never is anything on the external platform that we would measure materially as a success. That doesn't matter whether that's there or not. Whether you die in the bed of arrows or you ascend to the throne, it can be equal success. In the case of Vichrasura and Indra, Vichrasura's defeat was a greater success than Indra's victory. So sometimes those who don't have the external show are a greater success.
Well, thank you so much.
You are
I never understood it in that way.
You are so welcome. Well, what's nice about understanding success in that way is it's something that we can control. It's something that we can do. When we measure success the other way, we're always in anxiety because we can't control it. We can control it to some extent, but not fully. But the other is something that we can do. We can use our free will to fully connect with Krishna and Guru at any moment. And nothing can prevent it. Ahoy tu kiya pratita. Nothing. No material circumstances, no other person, nothing can prevent it. Absolutely nothing. And therefore, we can be a success in all circumstances. It may not appear that way to somebody else, but that's not relevant. That's not particularly important. In fact, looking for our success to appear as success to other people is part of what will prevent us from achieving success. If that's what's driving us, other people have to look at me and say, yes, you are a great devotee. You know, that's the opposite of what we want. Somebody else?
Chris Prabhu, did you want to ask a question? Maybe you can.
Mother Ella responded to my text earlier.
Can I ask just a real quick question? As far as the externals, I love the example you gave, just like something you can take a photograph of. Now, in the Nectar of Instruction, you know, that one place where it says Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that you can tell Uttama Adhikari by how many devotees, how many Vaishnavas he makes. So the other way around, is it possible that someone who is not an Uttama Adhikari can make many Vaishnavas?
You know, this is not something we like to talk about. But sometimes the power of a great devotee can flow through an unqualified person, at least to some extent. Just like we have Srila Prabhupada's books. So you can be whatever you are. But if you give someone Srila Prabhupada's books, in one sense, you've also contributed to making that person a devotee. That doesn't make you anything. And, I mean, just to be frank, we've seen this phenomena directly. That we've seen someone who acts as an agent for an Uttama devotee, and so it appears that the agent is the Uttama devotee. But they're not. And in time it's revealed that they're not. That the real Uttama devotee was acting through them. Now, the Uttama devotee the Uttama devotee can act through you according to your purity. But even, you know, you distribute Prabhupada's books, you don't have to have any purity at all to do that. Nothing. You wouldn't have to have any purity at all. I mean, I got Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita from my good friend's boyfriend's roommate at college, who had never looked at the book and had no interest in it. My friend and I was in college. My friend and I were going to get her boyfriend at his room. And while we were there, I saw Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita on the floor. And I said to my friend's boyfriend and his roommate, oh, isn't that the Hare Krishna book? And the roommate said, yeah, somebody gave it to me on the street, but I never looked at it. I said, could I borrow it? And he said, sure. So he gave me Srila Prabhupada's book, which was the final key in having me decide to dedicate my life to Krishna consciousness. But he wasn't an Uttama Adhikari, he wasn't in anything. I mean, that was some Agyata Sukriti. So I think we do have to be careful. Also, we see that there's many great devotees who were bhajana nandis and who weren't preachers. So that's one thing, but it can't be taken as the only thing. It's one thing. If you see that somebody has the potency to make many other people into Vaishnavas, and other things are also present, then you can understand this as an Uttama Adhikari. But just that alone can be tricky. It can be very tricky.
Okay, that's
good. Is that all right?
We don't
find that alone is the criteria for an Uttama Adhikari. Also, it can be absent, and you can still have an Uttama Adhikari. So it's not even a necessary condition. It certainly isn't sufficient, and nor is it necessary. However, if that symptom is there, then you can, you know, along with other symptoms.
Yes, like I said, I understood that maybe you can be a great devotee and not make a lot of Vaishnavas. But I was
and you
that.
Could be making a lot of Vaishnavas and not be a great devotee at all if some great devotee is using you. I mean, Prabhupada talked about Bhakti Sananta engaging Kunja Bihari. That Bhakti Sananta knew that Kunja Bihari had a lot of material motives. But at the same time, Kunja Bihari was offering service and he had a lot of talents. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati engaged him in service. So for the people acting in that way, it, as I said, acts as devotional sukriti. And it may look externally like they're the ones making a lot of devotees, but they're really not. They're really like, you know, it's someone else acting through them. We see this in ISKCON a lot. And I think the acknowledgement of this phenomenon in ISKCON has grown. So Chris is asking, is book distribution considered the highest service? Well, Prabhupada was asked in Atlanta, what pleases you the most? And the devotee asking was expecting Srila Prabhupada to say, if you distribute my books, and Prabhupada said, if you love Krishna. Now, Krishna says that the highest service is if you preach the message of the Gita to the devotees. He says, there's no servant more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. And especially if we're in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and without being a follower of Lord Chaitanya, getting to the highest platform in one life is going to be pretty hard. We're not going to say it's impossible, but it's not going to be easy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu particularly is in this mood of compassion. Adarya, he has the sentiment of his Ladini Shakti. So we are all encouraged to be Gosthinandis, to be preachers, and not to be Bhajanandis. That doesn't mean that being a Bhajanandi is bogus. But we are encouraged to be Gosthinandis. We are encouraged to be preachers. And of all the ways of preaching, book distribution is one of the most effective. And one reason the book distribution is one of the most effective is that we are putting people directly in touch with Krishna and with Uttamadikars. So that even if we have our own discrepancies, they're not really going to matter because we're giving them the greatest thing. Also, what's nice about books to a large extent transcend time and space. They, you know, if you're just speaking to people in a room, they only hear you in that room. You have the written word. It goes out far beyond the place where you're writing it or speaking it, and goes far beyond the time that it was written or spoken. Prabhupada said, you know, you talk for 3 minutes and people may forget what you say, but if you give them the book, well, it's in their home. And who knows? You know, maybe 20 years after they have the book, they open it up and say, I wonder what's in this book. Or maybe they give it to someone else, like that boy did it in college. He gave me a book. So he didn't read it. I mean, I don't know if he ever read it after I returned it. So, but I think we have to be careful about things like highest, because on the spiritual platform, that's true and it's not true. There really isn't something that's highest. You know, we could talk about going out on Harinam Sankirtan. Of course, Bhakti Sananta called the books the Brihat Murdanga, that they could take the holy name beyond just that particular street. And then there's a point I talk about a lot, that what's the highest and what's the highest for me and what's the highest for me now. So we really would not want that every single person who's a follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does nothing from morning until night except distribute books. Because we also want to build a society, Prabhupada called it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not just International Krishna Consciousness, not just ISKCON, but ISKCON. And to build a society, you know, we need some people taking care of cows, we need some people growing wheat, we need people taking care of the deities, we need people producing books. Prabhupada also told us to write our own books. Prabhupada told us to write at least every day something. need people publishing books. We need people building temples and cleaning them and maintaining them and taking care of the accounts. We need people running schools. There's a number of places where Prabhupada said that Gurukula is our most important project. When I ran Gurukula, I really liked that quote. Anyway, each of us tend to think that whatever we're doing is most important. I suppose otherwise we wouldn't do it. And there's various statements about this or that being the most important, or this being the most important. Even, you know, we say Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Stevana, 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 Gati, Ramita. And then all over the place it says hearing is the most important. Many places says remembering Krishna is the most important. So, you know, it's the most important. What's the most important is that we fall in love with Krishna. And the most important is that we act according to our nature in Krishna's service, and that we're connected with Krishna and Guru and the sadhus at every moment. That's what's most important. And then, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, our particular duty will become revealed by the grace of the Lord. So certainly all of us should try our best to distribute these books as much as possible to as many people as possible. At the same time, we all have our duty revealed by the Lord. So I think we should end here. Thank you very much, Prabhupada.